Welcome to Journeys in African Ventures, a podcast mini-series where we hope to encourage you with stories of African entrepreneurs and investors. Today, your host, Matthew Davis, co-CEO of Renew Capital, tackles a challenging question. How difficult is it to sell the Africa story to investors? Our guest, Rashab Luwania, CEO and founder of Bedilli, a marketplace for renewed devices in Africa, shares his journey, strategies, and the nuances of raising funding from diverse corners of the world. Stay tuned for an insightful conversation with Rashab.
Just to kind of set the table for the people that are on the call, would you give a 30-second kind of quick background of your story? Because you are a serial entrepreneur, and you've been on the investing side of the table, so you're a very unique entrepreneur in that you've invested, sold, or you've built, sold, invested, and now you're building again. Tell the folks a little bit about what you've done in the journey that has brought you to this call today.
Sure, thanks. Well, I've been doing this entrepreneurship thing now for the last 9 years. Bedilli is my fifth startup. Quick background is originally born and brought up in India. Did a database SaaS company in India that was sold to a Chinese conglomerate. Post that, moved to China and started investing in startups. It was a small micro VC, $20 million fund, investing across startups in Southeast Asia and the Indian subcontinent. Realized entrepreneurship is not really, investment is not really something that I enjoy as much as building up. So I moved to Africa back in 2017. Stayed in South Africa about 6 months, moved to Kenya, launched a business called We Media, which still operates. I hope some of you have heard of BeTracker, which runs technology startups and venture capital in Africa, and then gathered South Africa. That business is doing well, and then now building Bedilli, 15 months in now, enjoying every bit of it. Obviously, have had the luck and the fortune to have great investors back us, including Matt, who've been very, very helpful for us. So yeah, that's about me.
So let's get into the raw side of this, and then we'll get into the highlights. So you've raised capital before, and I think one of the big questions that I know a lot of entrepreneurs have when they meet with us, but they don't always feel comfortable asking, is it's great because we always hear the success stories, Rashab, but have you had any, what have been some of the hardest things that you've faced in the last 15 months of launching Bedilli when it comes to raising capital? Have people told you no? How do you take that? What happened in those situations? Just share a little bit of that for us with the group.
Sure. Yeah. Great question. You know, the investment ecosystem in general, especially on the pre-seed side. So I'm sort of going back 15 months back on when I was just starting up. This was a pre-launch sort of fundraise. I've done 3 rounds so far. The third one is ongoing. The second one is where Renew Capital came in. And the first one was pre-launch. So I'd say majority of, the hardest struggles were on the first round, where what I started realizing was, I had to seek capital from outside Africa as a region. And as soon as you start doing that, you're not pitching Kenya, you're not pitching Africa, you're not even pitching your product. The first thing you're selling is Africa as a story. Now, for investors that are sitting outside, it's really, I'd say it is a lot of narration and it is a lot of story pitching about what Africa's potential is. So I think I still remember, I was looking back at my first tech right now, just before this call. We really went from doing about 11 slides on why you should invest in an African, you know, sort of company and all of that. Second, I feel in context to this is the investment ecosystem across emerging markets, including Africa, is a very small chamber. So there's a very small chamber of investors that sort of exists. And investors talk. In my experience over the last 15 months, what I saw was, I mean, touch wood, great for us, because we did not face harsh criticism on why they wouldn't be investing in Bedilli. But I guess the no's where we heard, the major reason was I was just sort of counting the no's, and I think probably would have heard about 36, 37 no's so far from the, from the first calls that I've had, was why is nobody else doing this? This is something that is very obvious. Why is it that Badili and you were the first one to sort of solve the problem of, you know, pre-owned consumer electronics across Africa? So I sort of obviously find it a bit, you know, sort of funny. And then in general, in Africa, as a founder, if you're not in, again, it's sort of cliche, but if you're not building in the fintech and now the mobility space, your ecosystem and circle of investors is very, very limited. So I guess for me personally as a founder, it was a mix of pitching the Africa story to non-African investors, realizing there's a very small chamber of investors that exist in Africa. And if one big one is focused on fintech / mobility / business SaaS, then your potential investors, then the number of that is very little. So then you have to find a way and navigate around who do you really want to get to. So yeah, and investors, to be honest, they tell this to you openly of why they wouldn't want to invest in you. To be honest, investment and creating a fund is also a business now, coming from the investment side. So the investment side, as a VC, there is a mandate that your fund is only focused on investing in, you know, sort of certain sectors. So we do not have a lot of sector agnostic venture capitalists / early stage angel investors, venture capitalists in the African market. So yeah, a lot of no's in the pre-seed round, but I guess we got lucky where we got access to a group of global investors spread across US, Japan, India, Africa, across. So I guess it was that. But yeah, it's just that I feel a lot of other participants, especially if they're entrepreneurs, can sort of concur and agree to this, that pitching the Africa story to non-African investors will be the biggest, you know, sort of challenge to overcome in context of your own business solution.
What worked for you, Rishabh, when you were selling the Africa story? Did you put up the typical slides that I see, which is the demographic stuff? When did you suddenly realize I hooked them? When you were so out telling everybody, look, I'm going to build this in Africa. What worked? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, as I go back now, I think I was doing a lot of social pitching. We went through an accelerator, a global accelerator as well, in our third month. We were the third African company that sort of was taken in that accelerator. It's SOSV. But I think what I realized, what worked for me was really the entire motivation and fundamental of why Badili exists. I mean, for the audience as well, the reason why Badili really exists is because of one of my ex-colleagues who was arrested from my offices in Nairobi. The reason he was arrested was because he had bought a used phone. The used phone that he had bought was reported stolen, and the guy it was stolen from was reported murdered. Now, because he was in possession of that used phone, which he had actually purchased from a gray shop in downtown Nairobi, the DCI, which is the crime unit of the police in Kenya, booked him for all of these charges. So that had got me thinking of somebody can really get jailed and possibly for a very long time still in the Eastern and Western African markets just because they ended up buying a pre-owned, you know, smartphone. So I think creating that. So obviously my slides, I mean, going back to your question, my slides obviously did have the entire data on what's the smartphone penetration today, where is Africa poised to go by 2029, 2030. And then it was a lot about storytelling of what really happened. And I realized that once I did that, the focus went away from, are you building a Kenyan solution? Or, oh yeah, this could also be a Pan-African solution. So I think very indigenous and very specific in my case, it was the storytelling of what happened, which actually gathered a lot of attention from Western African investors, even who like, we did not have Western Africa in our plan at that point of time, because this was a 37th day of incorporation. But we raised money from very solid investors and sitting in Nigeria, because they realized this is exactly what we need in Nigeria as well. So I think for me, it was that quick connect that people could connect to of why something like this would work in the markets. But yeah, for others, it could be other things.
So let's do some numbers, and you don't have to divulge valuations or how much you raised, but how long sure. did it take you to get that first hard round closed? How many weeks or months?
Yeah, good question. I think the first round, so we raised just It's above $500,000-ish sort of dollars, which was our first pre-launch, pre-seed. The only thing that existed was our Delaware C Corp and sort of a pitch deck, not even a website. To be honest, I think here I sort of got lucky slash my previous entrepreneurial experiences sort of, you know, helped. The first check came from one of my very junior investors, Aaron, right, who runs Grenfell Holdings, where he basically invested out of a WhatsApp chat. I said, this is what I'm doing. This is the business. This is the market. And that's how I got my first $100,000. I think the next $500,000 was sort of the challenge. And I, from receiving the first check to actually final closing, it was about 5 to 6 months. Because the folks who actually were investing basis the entire credibility of the industry and not just the entrepreneur, we're also doing some sort of research on what sort of industry is this. And then another thing of the harshest and the hardest struggle and the truth about the African markets are that the valuations is a very interesting sort of take here. You will not be able to justify valuations of, especially I know the valuation that I was able to raise my first round at, I know that it would have been a very, very hard thing if I did not have 4 startups and 9 years of entrepreneurship behind me of why this company is valued at this sort of thing today. So when you compare this sort of valuation multiples, especially the valuation games across Southeast Asia, India, Europe, and the US, Africa in comparison to, let's say, put Southeast Asia is just about still 7.5x below. The average valuation in today in Southeast Asia of a pre-seed round is about $10 million. In Africa, you're talking about $1.5 million. So we were obviously significantly higher than that. So to answer your question, yeah, it took about 6 months to close the first round. Further on the second round that we did, I guess this is where the turning point really was. We were sort of, I think the first round is usually the sort of the easiest, especially when you're at pre-seed stage. You are pitching the potential of an idea, and you don't really have any execution on the ground. So it's more about where the business will go potentially. But as you now get to your second round, you need to have post-revenue sort of company with a lot of significant traction, partnerships, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the ROI on the first round that was invested in. So second round, which is your potential actually pre-seed seed round, is usually the hardest in my opinion. And I think here, if I just talk about what turned for me was, initially was really sort of struggling. We were raising about $2 million. The struggle was principally around, will you really be able to get a sort of a lead investor for this round? But I guess, I'm just going to be very open and take names. I got very lucky to sort of get VNR Africa as my first check in that round. VNR Africa is run by 2 gentlemen, Vishal, who's based in Kenya, and Raj, who's based in the UK. Mm-hmm. I guess VNR sort of was the turning point, to be honest, for mm-hmm. Badili in that round of ours, where we saw very interesting, a network getting opened up for us, and then we saw that how we were thinking that we probably closed at 1 million, but I think just by getting the first check from VNR in this case, we were able to just get with them with a syndicate of about $1 million. And then post that, I think it's the entrepreneur confidence that you get that, oh, if I can do this, then I can just do it, another $1 million. And then, to be honest, just did not stop, went on it, got lucky, found a new capital. You guys were the fastest in sort of, you know, bringing the check on the table. And then I guess from there, it was very, very interesting. So
how we got introduced to you, I was on a panel up in London. And it was a panel on, I think it was on gender equality or gender investing. And I was the only guy on the panel. And it was a real lively group. I mean, it was a very fun group. The other panelists were just absolutely phenomenal. Sure. And then there was this guy in the corner front row of this big room. And he was just firing off questions to us. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, who's asking these questions? So I get off the stage. Of course, everybody kind of like mingles around, and then we get shuttled off into a room for lunch. And I find this guy who's asking these questions, and I'm like, thanks for making the panel somewhat interesting and fun, because like he was really challenging us to like all these questions, like, well, who's right and you're wrong? And it was just like, and it was Raj. And I'm like, man, this is like great. I really enjoy like these conversations with you. So exchange WhatsApp numbers. Then he fires me this WhatsApp saying, hey, I've got this deal. I'm trying to close it out. If you're interested in doing a deal with me, let me know. And I said, sure, pass it on. And it was Padilla. And then I remember I got a phone call with you. So I took about 2 or 3 weeks to get on a call with you. I am back raising capital. So for those of you who want to understand how the industry works, everything kind of flows down, right? So I have to raise capital, and then I turn around and I hear great entrepreneurs like Rashad pitch, and then we deploy capital to them. So we all are in the same game. It's just different levels. And so I was just leaving New York, raising capital. And I was, my wife was driving at the time, and it was like this very hectic, like we were trying to get out of Brooklyn. And I'm sitting there with the computer, and you're pitching to me as you're like driving through traffic. And I think I was like, yeah, I passed it on to our team. So this looks like a great deal. And I'm very happy we did. And I'm very happy to be hopefully a part of your next round as well, which is exciting. So tell me this though, Rashab. I mean, part of what hooked me about you, and probably what's hooked a number of investors about you, is that, you know, you're not cocky. Right. So we've had, man, I tell you, I've had some pitches where it's like clearly a lot of showboating, a lot of inflating, a lot of I'm amazing. You know, what I was most impressed with when you pitched, and even the way that Rashad or when Raj described you, it's like you've been there, you've done it, which isn't everybody's story. So there's a lot of first time entrepreneurs, and we believe in giving them a chance as well. I mean, it's great to back an entrepreneur that's done it before, but you know, in Africa, we're still at the very early stages of the private sector really taking off. How much of it, I guess my question is, your internal confidence when you're in front of an investor, and how much of it is the traction that you were getting? Because I know that first kind of round, it was hard. You didn't really even have any traction, but it starts to get easier and easier. Is that you getting more confident in your business model, in the market, in your numbers? Or is it just that one traction chart that really shows that you're starting to do it and it's going up and to the right?
Sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, just sort of before this, you mentioned the story about Raj, and I guess sort of have to mention this, you know, I mean, so I'm a very heavy believer of the Pareto principle, right? Which is 20% of your efforts are going to get 80% of things done for you. I think it's pretty much the same on your cap table. 20% of your investors. So today we have about 26 cap table sort of, you know, shareholders, and we know that 20% of our existing investors are going to drive 80% of our existing traction and the future traction. One of them is obviously VNR, and to be honest, like very unapologetically, second is Renew Capital. Right. So Renew has added like a great amount of value to us. And then we probably talk more about it when I start asking you questions. But now coming back to this entire thing of confidence. Yeah, I think I'd say it's 100% confidence. Right. Sure. I mean, if you inside of you know that this is something that is actually working out, the reason why you will actually reach to a second fundraising level is when you've seen good enough significant traction and you know that you actually need this capital to go from zero to one. So I feel that, at least for me, I think it's 70% confidence with a mix of storytelling. My growth is never enough for a fundraising round. So your growth is still to be topped up with your founder optimism. Because if it is just some initial growth, yes, you've been growing 200% month on month, but are those numbers really relative, right? So your 200% growth month on month, in my opinion, has to be topped up with your confidence and optimism on how this would grow along the next 4 or 5 quarters. So yeah, I guess for me, it's the confidence, but I personally know entrepreneurs where for them, it's just the numbers that have spoken for them, obviously, along with their great confidence, because if you have numbers, your sort of confidence starts speaking itself, probably till a certain point of time. I'm not sure, Matt, what would you say on this? I feel till the time you're a Series A entrepreneur and you've raised about $10, $15 million, I think your first $15 million is more or less a bet on you as the founder and then the idea. Maybe after the $15 million, it changes where it's not just you, it's your entire tribe of the top management team and the idea. What is your take on that?
Almost all of it comes down to the final decision is the person, the entrepreneur. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, what about, you know, a founding team? Sure, but that's really hard here. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, of course, if we were in other parts of the world, you can have three or four people. That's great. But here, you know, it's the person or the two people that are really the masterminds behind it. And it's their energy. It's, you know, so we always say coachable, scalable, and trustworthy. Those are the three things that we are always constantly asking about an entrepreneur. Coachable, do they think they know it all? Are they cocky? Or are they really looking for a thought leader and a thought partner to walk with them through this journey? Scalable, though, on the other side of that, if they're too coachable, then they're like, tell me what to do. And we just hate that. And trust me, some of my biggest mistakes were investing in people that were very coachable and not scalable. So you really want an entrepreneur that's going to push back a little, but also come to you and ask you for advice. They're not going to do everything, but they're really, you know, you can tell that they're switched on, that they're thinking, they've got that internal energy. And then, of course, the absolute criteria is trustworthy. Like, would I trust? One question we always say is, and we ask all of our team about this when they're bringing us the deals, would you go work for them? Would you go and work for that entrepreneur? And if they can say, I would, then we're like, okay, that's a deal that we will look at. So those are the things that are really important to us. And yeah, it's all about the entrepreneur. I can't say that enough. So important at this stage. I promise you, I will be as brutally honest as possible. And I will not sugarcoat anything. You are more than welcome to ask me any question that you have about the other side. So let's turn the table where the entrepreneur gets to ask the investor questions and you just kind of get asked one. But what questions do you have?
Sure. Yeah. I guess let's start with why did you end up investing in Padili?
I just told you. Well, it started because, again, and this is something that I encourage anybody that's raising capital to do. The best way we find the best deals is through referrals. And so the cold outreach, very rarely, but it was Raj who I connected with. And I said, okay, wow, this guy, he knows what he's doing clearly. He's a lawyer. I mean, he knows what's going on. And then his introduction to you, that's how I was like, okay, that's already a plus. And then your idea was unique. I looked at thousands of companies. I was like, I actually don't think that there are people that are doing this right now. Ironically, right before I got on the call with you, I was on a call with one of the most successful founders of one of the most successful venture capital firms in China. He started in the 80s and just, I mean, amazing. And I was like, well, what did you do? Because I essentially want to just rebuild your portfolio because you're freaking amazing. And he's like, you know, you should really look for technology retail. And I'm like, technology retail. And then I had a call with you. And so kind of the stars aligned a little bit. And then you, and the way that you pitched, the story you told, how you presented it, it kind of all checked out. Of course, then we have our team. Our team comes in and looks at the numbers. But then I really, I was impressed when my team also had a very favorable opinion of you. We have a lot of entrepreneurs that try to kind of push, you know, the analysts and our team members to the sideline. And that's not good. We don't like that. We like to see, you know, people that are really respecting the way that our team was asking questions. You're very transparent. Like the business, like you, K-Refer. And that was it.
Quick. Sort of a follow-up question on, I mean, for new entrepreneurs who are trying to now reach out to Renew to sort of raise capital, if they do not know. So, and this is frequently a question that I also think of. Your network is usually limited when you're focused on building a company. So as much as you want to start networking, you also want to, majority of the time goes in building, raising, et cetera, et cetera. If you do not have a network of, if I do not have anybody in my network that knows Matthew Davis, how do I then get in touch with Renew Capital? And then, like, how do you then invest in me in general? What's that step for a founder?
So if you don't have a direct connection with me, I'll just use me as an example, but any investment firm. First off, I know that, for example, in Nairobi or in Lusaka, where Calvin's at, for example, our team member in Lusaka, Calvin is always out at these events. One way to do it is to get to know Calvin. You know, you might not want to like accidentally bump in and spill your coffee all over him. And, you know, it's one of those stories, but you want to start to get to run into them on occasion, you know, start to talk to them about your business and then build the relationship that way. It's a little bit longer. It's probably not as successful, to be honest, as finding an investor or an entrepreneur in our portfolio that recommends the business to me. Those will always get priority in my inbox. So for example, if Raj or if there's a few others, there's a few investors that when they email me a deal, I will shut down everything and open up that email because that's the most important email I get. As well as from our entrepreneurs. If our entrepreneur is saying, hey, this is someone that I've been watching, I really like their business, they're a customer of ours, or we're buying from them, or they're in our community, I will absolutely look at those emails. So those are some of the best ways, I would say, to get to know us. Yeah.
Great. So as I said, I've raised money before. And in this startup, we've raised money from different venture capitalists, micro VC, then angel investors. We've gone through an accelerator, but again, openly saying that for everybody, that Renew Capital is one of the, personally, I've never seen a venture capital firm with a very human capital centric focus, where the journey actually starts after the money comes in, and the journey is not of following up on your monthly reports or your MIS or your data rooms. It's basically about now training this guy who you invested in, and then, you know, like really doing a lot of, as you said, you know, coaching on multiple operational and processes thing. I feel so. And then when you introduce yourself, you said, I'm the founder and CEO of Renew Capital. And this is one of the very few rare introductions of a GP managing partner calling themselves as a founder CEO. So what's that approach? I see you're building a VC pretty much as a startup, as you said, that you're now out again in the market raising capital. And again, I've been openly marketing Renew Capital almost anywhere that I go. It's like the one VC who you want on your cap table is Renew Capital. Because the kind of things that they tell you on what to do is a lot different than the kind of thing any other angel or VC would do. So what is that typical? I'm sure you've done the research. What is the typical difference that you see between an ex-VC operating out of Africa, having, let's say, a $200 million sort of fund, and then a Renew Capital who's doing fairly good size check for a seed round? And so what's that fundamental difference? And why should I, as a founder, look at Renew Capital to be my next cap table shareholder?
Yeah, I know, that's a great question. I will say, I do think that there are some phenomenal other investors out there. I think I fundamentally believe that the more we can put ourselves in the shoes, and I encourage anyone on this call to ask our team members if we actually live by this, because if we don't, then I'm a liar, and that's not good. We have to live up to this. But I tell our team, we have to, for us to be able to play this game well and to really be able to walk alongside what I believe has the potential to be the next great world-class companies in the world's next big growth market. So deep in my soul, I believe Africa's the future, period. Full stop, all is done. That every assumption in our entire business is founded on that belief. From there, we're like, okay, so this is the future. What do we do about it? Well, we got to get behind some really amazing companies. How do we do that? Well, we got to go find them. And then we got to experience what it's like to be them. And so from the very beginning, when Laura and I was just two people in a small apartment in a crappy building that, gosh, I hope doesn't fall down in Addis, when we were bootstrapping our business from ground zero one in Africa, we said, we need to never lose sight of this. This right now, the pain that we're having, what we're experiencing, if we can document and really walk in the shoes of an entrepreneur, we'll hopefully be a better investor for them and we'll be somebody that could really walk alongside them. And every day, I love walking around the office and seeing our team members. You know, they're struggling sometimes. You know, it's hard. I run into the same challenges, Rashid. When you and I sat down and had coffee the other morning, and you said, "What's your morning like?" You know, I'm like, "What's your morning like?" I want to learn from you. Like, what'd you do? Like, it was comparing notes. I feel like the more that investors can model and mimic what it's like to be in the shoes of the entrepreneurs they're investing in, the better they'll be, because we'll know, we'll be able to have empathy, we'll be able to walk alongside you. And I promise you this, almost every challenge that you all have had, I've had the same thing. So I can feel like when I get up and we do our management training on planning, when we do a management training on what the hell is my job as a CEO of a company that's going from $1 million to $10 million, I can tell you, I didn't know the answer to that either. And I had to go out and have people tell me, and this is what I'm telling you. So I hope that comes across.
I mean, you've now been doing this for a very long time. What's the most difficult part of doing what you do? Like, I'm sure there are multiple, but like, give me the top three. What is the most difficult part of being an investor in the African ecosystem?
I think number one for me, hands down, has been when I was just starting off, I was really offensive to a few people. And I've had to write a lot of, like, I'm sorry emails because I was a real jerk board member. I'm not going to lie. I pushed too hard. And so it was a challenging, because I was new to the game. I didn't know exactly what I was doing. I was kind of coming at this. I had a lot of pressure because I had investors saying, you can't screw up this first deal. And I mean, I would wake up in the middle of the night. I asked Laura, I mean, I was stressed out beyond belief. I've learned to be way more. It's way better to be encouraging than putting pressure on. And I had to learn that the hard way. And so I've now sent, again, lots of, I'm sorry, emails, taking people out to have lots of coffees and apologize for kind of my naivety in the beginning. But it's some advice that I would give to people. Make sure when you bring on an investor, like, how long have you been doing this? Have you made mistakes? What were the mistakes you had? So I think that's probably my number one. Everything else is just gravy beyond that. It's really the tension that I've created with the entrepreneurs and having to learn how to do that better.
And to adding on to that, from that experience of, as you said about entrepreneurs, more of a personal question, I think, which I sort of ended up not asking you before, was for you, in your opinion, what's the number one role of a founder CEO of a company?
Of a founder CEO of a company? Oh, that is a great question. So I think a founder CEO first has to obsess about building something that the market wants. Nothing else really matters after that. But I mean, that they have to be very... I find too many want to be on panels or to go to seminars or to raise capital. I think you have to at least come up with the idea and really go out and get validation that I've made something that people want to pay for. But immediately after that, a founder CEO does have to bring in capital. And that is a part of selling the story quickly because you're going to need that runway. And then after that, it's really working hard to build the team. So, you know, it's what do they say? Idea and execution, right? Those are the two big things, ideas and execution. Get the idea right. And then execution, execution, execution. And I think after you know, execution is very challenging. So we focus a lot of that, of our support with companies on how do you execute better and faster.
Yeah. Sure. Last one on obsession. You just mentioned obsession. And I'm going to brand this episode as the Bedini-sponsored August episode, which it is not, obviously. What do you think is the potential of Bedini? Where do you think this goes from here?
Well, I think, I will say this about you, what I think the potential of you is, I think you have the potential to be one of the greatest legends in Africa's economic history. So that's what I care more about. Will you build Bedili and take it public? I have no doubt. Do I hope, though, that after you do that, you'll come back and start your own firm like ours, or join our firm, or go launch another firm and start investing in talent here? I think that is your multiplier impact, which is how I look at you and I look at every founder. It's not, do I think they're going to take that business and are we going to sell it and make lots of money? I give a crap about that. It's what are you going to do after that I care about? Are you going to come back and are you going to do it again and again and again? If I can find more people like, and I believe you have that potential, this continent will be the next great economic story of the 22nd, 23rd centuries. I mean, I think it's going to be amazing. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for that. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Rishabh. I mean, again, I can't say it enough. I think you have a ton of potential. And I do hope that for those of you out there that are interested in and want to join in these discussions, I would love nothing more than to have you on this show talking and sharing your stories and experience. A few things that I took away from this that I absolutely loved. I mean, Rishabh gave us some amazing numbers. 5 to 6 months it took him to get that first pre-seed round, then 3 to 3.5 to 4 months to get that next. Now he's talking in terms of weeks, right? And a lot of that came getting the right people on board. He started to turn the corner and his traction was taking off. I think that was an absolute pearl of wisdom. A couple of things that I really took away with this is notice how, I mean, I'll say this about Rishabh. Rishabh knows how to use his investors very well. One of the things that I want to encourage those of you who bring on an investor is use them. He said the Pareto principle, which was 20% of your revenue is going to come from 80% of your customers. 80% of your revenue is going to come from 20% of your customers. He said 80% of his ability to get and open up networks and to get support is coming from 20% of the people on his cap table. So be specific about who you're bringing on. Make sure you know what they've done. Make sure you know the mistakes they've made. See how they've matured as investors. I thought that was brilliant as well.
Thank you for joining today's episode of Journeys in African Ventures. If you found value in the content, please share it. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes and tune in next time.